it is. Hendrix. Promise you, swag. Admit it. Yo.
Welcome back to the Press and Coverage Podcast. We had to do an emergency pod based on all the news that came out today. More importantly, as always, I'm Mason Shreen, and I'm joined by the one, the only. He just got released onto parole today after serving 9 years. It's Max Wiener!
The ween is on the loose. We are going back-to-back PCP 2 days in a row. This might be a new record. Get excited, because today has been in fuego for news.
Wow, I forgot that. I totally didn't realize that our initials do spell PCP.
Yeah, I know. We're hopefully the drug administration does not come after us.
Yeah, let's hope.
Speaking Don't do of drugs, the, kids.
Speaking of crime, which I was going to say, I think ween on the loose kind of sounds like a criminal offense. but let's start off with, I mean, I don't even know what the biggest story of the day would be, but I if I had to guess, this would be the one. So a lot happened today, but I think the earliest story was O.J. Simpson's parole is now allowed to be on parole. He served 9 years of his 33-year sentence, and now the juice is once again on the loose. Max, what went through your head when you heard this happened?
Well, he's almost on the loose. I don't think it actually happens until October, but I don't know. It's we were not alive for the flurry that was the O.J. Simpson trials, but I think – I don't know, it's tough to say. He is such an influential figure in our society, and you got to question how his influence may have influenced his decision of him getting parole, but hopefully he comes out and is able to live a clean life and go back. He'll never be the same as he was before all the drama surrounding him.
No, of course not.
He was as bright as the sun, and he was one of the most influential sports stars.
I wouldn't even say influential. I would just say he was one of the most recognizable people on planet Earth at the time.
I agree with you. So it's tough that he's never going to be – or he did some very bad things, and he
– Allegedly.
Allegedly. And
well,
he
the
has
first
paid,
time. The second time.
He definitely did
not
it.
Not allegedly. Yeah.
He has paid the price for it, so hopefully he can move forward with his life, and we can get a little bit more of the juice, and hopefully he can go back to being a outstanding member of society.
Yeah, well, we'll see. I am very interested to see what his next move is. Do you think he's seen all like the specials, all the documentaries? Do you think he's seen the ESPN 30 for 30 about him?
It wouldn't surprise me. I'm sure they have to get some sort of permission to be able to use his likeness in those productions, either from his family or himself.
Do you think he's like actually watched them?
From what I've heard about OJ, I would not be surprised if he has watched them.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I wonder which one he'll like better, the one where he's played by Cuba Gooding Jr. or the one split into five parts that's like 8 hours about him.
So very question, Mason. Now that he's out, do you see him potentially having some sort of role in football?
No.
No, you don't think he'd be an analyst or a
no
special?
No one would hire him. I don't even think Fox would hire him. I'm not trying to insult Fox or anything. But, no, I don't know if he would accept a job in front of a camera. I don't think he wants any more light on him. But then again, that's so weird because that's OJ. That's what OJ used to be all of.
Yeah.
That, yeah, but then he got sent to prison and then he got painted in a very bad light and then, you know, and the whole trial. So I don't know. I'm sure part of his parole won't let him I'm sure that will make it tougher for him to be on camera. Maybe when I don't know how long his parole is. I don't know the facts of the final decision, but yeah, I think we're done with OJ, seeing OJ with football. I mean, he left football to go be an actor. So I don't know. I think maybe the most that we'll ever see of OJ again is he does like a cameo in some movie 20 years from now.
He'll probably be in 60 Minutes at some point, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure there will be an interview. There will be an interview, I'm sure. Maybe we'll get like a E60 or something.
Yeah, I'm sure. Probably not as soon as we would expect, but definitely 10 years down the line, I can see that happening.
Yeah.
So now, moving on. Some sad news today in our action-packed day. Vocalist Chester Bennington was found dead. Most notably, he is known for being the lead singer of the extremely popular alternative band Linkin Park. Mason, what was your reaction when you heard this shocking news?
You know, I don't want to say I was bummed, but like, I was kind of heartbroken. Like, I feel especially our generation, like everybody goes through a Linkin Park phase, whether they admit it or not, whether it was Minutes to Midnight or Hybrid Theory or, you know, whichever album it was for you. You know, everybody goes through a Linkin Park phase once, whether it be for a short time, for a long time. I know for me, mine was from about 5th to 7th grade. I loved Linkin Park. And, like, I would listen to some of their old music occasionally. It's not really my cup of tea anymore, but, you know, I still have love for them. And so the fact that, like, they played a huge part in my generation's, you know, music experience, it really broke my heart because, you know, I can recognize Chester's voice pretty much anywhere now.
I think he has one of the most iconic voices of the 2000s.
Oh, yeah, no, for sure. I mean, the Linkin Park sound, for better or for worse, you know, you knew who it was when you were listening to it because of Chester. I mean, he had a way that sounded like he could go from, you know, I don't want to say he was doing screamo, but he could go from, you know, having a soft voice to be, you know, sound like he was scream singing it, which that's probably not the correct term for the technique, but yeah, no, it's heartbreaking. I mean, I'm not going to say it's on the level of what happened to Cobain, but, you know, it's still tragic nonetheless.
So, yeah, I was heartbroken. I still remember being a child and one of my very, very good friends, Danny, would beg his mom to put on Hybrid Theory in the car when she was driving his places. And his like I said, his voice is just so iconic, and he had such a breathtaking vocal range that he was just a very impressive musician. And just Linkin Park is one of the most defining groups of the early and mid 2000s. They have sold over 27 million records since they first released their studio album worldwide, which is amazing. They were voted the most popular group of the 2000s, and they have so many top hits. And I one song that really stuck out for me, them, is not just their one song, but it's still honestly one of my favorite songs of all time, is Numb/Encore, which in my personal opinion is the best mashup of all time. And it's just such a unique project that they were able to bring such very different but similar musical styles with Jay-Z and hip-hop, and then the alternative rock music of Numb together to create such a entertaining piece of art. And
yeah, you had Chester, you know, bringing in the very catchy hook that he's so great at doing, Linkin Park is amazing at doing, and you had Jay-Z at the same time, you know, boxing him up, you know, just laying out lines, spitting bars. You know, it made for an awesome track. I don't know if it's their best song.
I agree. It's just one that I can still put it on today, and it's one of those songs that you have on a playlist that no matter what mood you're in, you just don't skip it, and that's what Numb Encore is for me.
Yeah.
But I think it's very sad. I think if there is a silver lining to these events is that it does, once again, bring to light that mental illness is a powerful disease, and it's not something that you can ignore. And if anyone out there is struggling with their demons, definitely there's people out there that to get help, and definitely is a lesson that we need to focus on more in modern society.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's just another... You know, I don't know what caused it, but, you know, I have a feeling that I'm sure fame and stress had something to do with it. And just, it's another just tragic happening of, you know, people kind of just losing control of their lives, and it puts them down this just tragic path. And I'm sure anyone that has experienced something similar, or someone that has lost a family member to something like that, can, you know, agree that, that, you know, it's, I mean, I don't know what word to use other than tragic and just a catastrophe. But yeah, I mean, obviously the members of the band, the, his family, you know, they're in our thoughts. So, you know, hopefully you guys are able to keep going strong.
Yes, 100% agree. And I think this will really bring back to light the memories of Linkin Park.
But I think this is a great time to talk about that, Max. Let's briefly, you know, let's talk a little bit about Linkin Park. So you already talked about Numb Encore. What would you say is your personal favorite Linkin Park song that doesn't have Jay-Z in it?
So one of the songs that I really like, which is, it's weird because it's not even like one of their biggest hits, but Bleed It Out, for some reason I really enjoy that song.
Minutes to Midnight, underrated album.
I completely agree. And then You Can't, like, In the End is like the iconic Linkin Park song.
Yeah.
You know, as well as Crawling.
I think my favorite song for them by them was either, I loved like their early stuff. I loved Breaking the Habit. I think that might be my favorite song. That or Shadow of the Day, which is on Minutes to Midnight. You know, that was when like Linkin Park really reached their peak of fame, and whenever Michael Bay, you know, they just partnered with Michael Bay for Transformers, and they went from being in the stratosphere to being on the face of the sun, I feel. Minutes to Midnight, they had, I think, three songs in the top 10 at one time. And it was just, you know, it was a great time to be a Linkin Park fan. I do love how Shadow of the Day is much more drum based, and it is much slower than their typical, you know, their bangers. So yeah, those are some of the highlights that I have for Linkin Park. But I think their best album might still be their first, or no, might still be Hybrid Theory. What about you? What are your thoughts?
I agree. I think that's classic Linkin Park. But I think the most impressive thing about them is that while most bands, they do have their sound, Linkin Park was very good at evolving throughout time. I recently watched a video of, I think it might have been Biggington who was talking about how that throughout their evolution as a band, they were trying to change and augment their sound based on what was, how music was going. And they actually have an evolution, which is a very mature approach to music, that even though they know they had a sound that works, they were still ambitious enough to try to experiment with new sounds. My example would be when Minutes to Midnight was a very different sound than what Hybrid Theory was.
Yeah, I mean, Hybrid Theory and Meteora, they were much more like heavy alternative, whereas Minutes to Midnight, you had some of that flair in there, but it was a much softer album. And I know A Thousand Suns was a really different album. That was when their sound really took a turn. And it might not have been the most popular, but, you know, I still thought it was applaudable. But yeah, no, I think Linkin Park, more than almost any band of the 2000s, was able to maintain relevance by changing their sound with the time. So yeah, I think that's something that can't go stated, you know, cannot be understated. And, you know, and even though I know that they were like incredibly, incredibly popular during the 2000s, I still can't help, you know, shake this feeling that they're still kind of an underrated band. And like when you talk about, you know, the all timers, I don't know if they're an all time, like they're in the top 10 of the pantheon or however many bands you would have in the top. But I think they definitely deserve to be in some sort of, you know, respectful discussion of at least the best alternative band of all time.
I agree. I think that just people see them as just angry and grungy and like, oh, they're just screaming. But when you really sit down and listen to them, the music that they created is very heartful, and it is very much a work of art musically.
Yeah.
And they're just impressive from top to bottom. And I think the real their fans that have followed them throughout the years could definitely attest to their musical abilities.
Yes. I mean, I agree. Also, I do want to mention that Chester's voice was not just amazing for their songs, but Linkin Park has my favorite cover of all time, and it was their cover of Rolling in the Deep by Adele. So go check that out on YouTube.
I haven't heard that. I'll definitely check that out.
Yeah, no, it's very good. It sounds like the lyrics are all the same. He sings it the exact same way, but it seems like it's a whole new song with Chester's voice. So again, just, you know, RIP Chester, you have a place, you know, all 90s kids and early 2000s kids' hearts. So Max, on to I won't even say a happier note, but just a different beat. So earlier today, about, I don't know, 35 minutes ago, Hugh Freeze, the head coach of the Ole Miss Rebels, announced he was retiring. Resigned from his position at Ole Miss. And Max, would you like to inform the audience as to why he did so?
So, according to rumors, he apparently...
Sources say.
Yes. He apparently contacted an escort service while as a coach in terms of helping for recruiting purposes.
So, yeah, he was trying to get biddies for the boys, is what you're saying.
Yeah, that is exactly what I'm saying in PC terms, yeah.
Yes, PC terms. PC, you mean press and coverage terms.
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, that was a thing that happened today. Hugh Freezes died for the sins of his university.
yeah, but Mason, would you like to tell me what their best accomplishment was? And when a couple years ago, like the best that they ever did.
So, man, the best thing that Ole Miss has done in the past couple years, ooh, I would say it would probably be that they won the Fiesta Bowl. But let's actually take it
Mason,
a
Mason,
back.
That's not what I was going for.
No, I know, think I know. Close I know. To home. So let's take it a year back. Let's take it back a year. Ole Miss, 2014-2015 season, they had upset Alabama that year in the first of 2 years. It was slanging Bo Wallace's last years in his 7 years of college. And they had played this team in, I believe it was the Peach Bowl. And I forgot what happened. I think it was a very close game. I think they barely lost. I think the final score was like 42-3 TCU Ole Miss. Was that right, Max?
Mason, are you telling me this is where the magic started, right?
Oh yeah, we gotta remind them or inform the audience about what we're talking about here. So every time that Max and I watch a sporting event together in person, good things tend to happen. So we say that it started when both Max and I sat down and watched TCU play in the Peach Bowl, but actually it started the summer before that when we went and saw
69.
Summer of 69. When we saw Derek Jeter's last game as a Yankee in Rangers, in Derek Jeter's last season, and he came and played for the Rangers, and the Rangers won, and that was when they were having one of their worst seasons of the decade, and they somehow managed to win it in a 5-3 game. I can't remember the exact score, but it was pretty.
It's where it all started.
Yeah,
everyone has an origin story.
Exactly. This is, and then we got our superpowers. And so then we watched the Peach Bowl together and watched just Ole Miss just shit the bed / TCU annihilate them that year. It was fantastic. Right after we got snubbed from our playoff spot, which was another discussion, which I can go on for 7 hours. And then what is quite possibly the most magical moment of them all is we went to San Antonio to watch TCU play in the Alamo Bowl. And that was in 2016. That was the 2015-2016 season. And so, Max, what happened then?
So we saw what is arguably the greatest comeback in college football history.
I don't even know if it's arguable. I mean, it's the biggest. It's the biggest comeback in bowl game history for sure. 31 points. TCU was down 31-0 at half. Gary Patterson switched up his shirt, which. Maybe that had something to do with it, or it was maybe that Max and I were in the stands together. TCU comes back and wins it in triple overtime. Comes back from being down 31 points. Ties it at the end of regulation. Mm-hmm. Safe to say, I was crying. Max had torn his shirt off. Max had just taken, like... We went to Patty O'Brien's, the place that Trayvon had punched the cop, R.I.P. Trayvon.
And prayed to all the football gods, and our prayers were answered.
And then Max later prayed to the porcelain god later that night after taking 31 shots. And by 31 shots, I mean like 4.
Yeah, you know, I'm a lightweight. But yeah, the magic continued this past season, where Mason came up to good old Happy Valley to see the fighting Nittany Lions face off against number 2 Ohio State, and in surprising fashion during...
Wait, Max, who were they playing?
The Ohio State, excuse me.
No. The Ohio State University. I'm sorry, I had to correct you there, bud.
We can talk about that later, Mason. So during the biggest game of the year, the whiteout, fireworks
fighting
happened.
Extinct Nittany Lions weren't extinct that day.
No. And the Penn State was able to, after a miraculous blocked field goal, was able to win the day and knock off number 2 to be ranked for the very first time.
Since Nam.
Yes, since Nam. But that that is just 4 pieces of evidence that Mason and I are magic. We'll be taking applications for our services soon. Just get excited. But back to Ole Miss, Mason.
So yeah, but our relationship, you know, kind of our friendship and, you know, kind of pressing coverage can all be really attributed all the way back to Hugh Freeze and Ole Miss. And Ole Miss making the Peach Bowl that year. So, you know, while, yes, Hugh Freeze, you may or may not have tried to hire some hookers for your players, you know, we do want to thank you for everything that you've done, not just for our friendship, but for the world, really.
Hugh Freeze died for pressing coverage.
He might have. He might have. Honestly, he's either the Jesus or the Judas of pressing coverage. I'm not sure yet.
Why not both?
Por que no les dos? I don't know, Max, because one of them is supposed to be perfect and the savior of mankind, and the other one betrayed the former. So, but wow, yeah, so goodness gracious. I mean, it's been a very eventful day, man, and it's fantastic. It's been a great news day.
Quick question, Mason, for you.
Yes.
How long until Ole Miss has a winning season again?
Until they have a winning season, or until they have until they're bowl eligible?
Let's go with both.
Winning season, I think they'll have one in 3 years, because they still have some talent on there, but they're so, you know, they're radioactive. Like, they could just blow up at any minute. Like, I don't know. I don't know what their schedule is next year, but I think they can go 7-5. But I think that they're going to be kind of like they're on the Baylor trajectory right now. Maybe not as bad, but yeah, I think that once they drop below the Meridian or the 6-6 threshold, it'll be 3 years, 3 or 4 years. They've got some rebuilding to do. They will have some rebuilding to do, I'm sorry. As for bowl eligibility, I feel like they'll get banned for 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. I think it's the NCAA has been very sporadic on their dishing of punishment. I'm sure we could have a whole pod on the NCAA and their investigative abilities. But
hey, Max, what do you call an alligator in a vest?
I don't know what.
Not the NCAA, because you call it an investigator.
Mason,
thank you.
You'll be here all night.
I'll hang up now. I'm sorry.
Yeah, there goes our listeners.
But you know who's the most happy about this, right?
Mississippi State?
Nick Saban.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely. Ole Miss, who beat them in back-to-back years, arguably because of Hugh Freeze in his system, doesn't have to worry about that anymore. So
Mason, what you're telling me is there's no way to beat Alabama without cheating.
Oh, unless you have Deshaun Watson on your team.
But that's like having a cheat code, because it's just not fair.
Yeah, no, I mean, unless you're Clemson and the only way to beat Alabama is to throw the ball a crap ton, because you're not running on them. You can't play their game. You got to be able to. There's two ways. Well, there's the game plan to beat Alabama is this, is you have to be able to throw the ball well and not turn it over. And you have to be able to get pressure to the quarterback. I mean, that's how you beat Alabama. And Ole Miss was able to do both of those when they beat them in 2015. And yeah, I just, you know, Bama is the machine. Bama will continue to grow. Nick Saban will continue to grow his farm of players that he has. And, you know, maybe one day LeBron James will come home and play for the Alabama basketball team. But yeah, just Bama's going to be unstoppable. So yeah, good old Hugh is gone. And I wonder where his next coaching place will be. Maybe he'll join, he'll go and join good old Joey Freshwater in Boca Raton at FIU. Ooh. And by Joey Freshwater, I mean Lane Kiffin. The Joey Freshwater story is a story I'll tell another time, but it is hilarious. Just Google Joey Freshwater, Lane Kiffin, if you want to hear it before that, though.
All right. Well, Mason, this has been a nice emergency pod. Anything else you would like to talk about?
The Diamondbacks are number one, Max.
I agree. D-Back Nation, the official podcast of Diamondback Nation right here in Press and Coverage land.
But other than that, Max, Dunkirk comes out tomorrow worldwide.
Mr. Worldwide?
Oh, my God. Fuck off. but, yeah, my anticipated best movie of the year might not be the Oscar winner, but I think it's going to be for sure the best movie of the summer, which is so funny because my favorite movie of the summer changes every week. Like, it was Baby Driver, and then it was Spider-Man Homecoming, and then it was War for the Planet of the Apes, and now it's probably going to be Dunkirk. I'm waking up tomorrow at the crack of dawn, driving into Dallas to go see it in 70mm IMAX, which is apparently the way to experience it. So I'm super excited. This is the earliest I've ever gotten up to see a movie. I've never bought an early bird tickets until now. So
what I'm you're saying is Mason is 65.
Yes, and I got a nice discount on it, so suck it, Max.
Well, I am currently planning on seeing Dunkirk on Tuesday because the local theater around me has $5 Movie Tuesdays, which is a fantastic deal, by the way. So definitely next week we will be talking a little Dunkirk, so look forward to that.
Yeah, you know, all I gotta say is my final remarks, T-Wolves Nation, Diamondbacks number one. And trust the process.
Alright guys, thank you very much for listening once again. This is the Pressing Coverage podcast. You can find Mason on Twitter at Mason_B Shireen. You can find myself at Maximus Wiener. And you can follow Pressing Coverage on both Twitter and Instagram at Pressing Coverage. Make sure also to give us a follow on Facebook. 5 stars on iTunes, and make sure to share us out to all of your friends on every social media you can imagine. Thank you guys for listening, and we will catch y'all next time.